We're here in the Congressional Corner with Vermont Senator Peter Welch, a Democrat in office since this year after serving in the U.S. House. In our last conversation, you mentioned a recent meeting of the Rural Development and Energy Subcommittee about expanding broadband. What's the scope of America's broadband internet access shortfall?
Well, it's pretty significant, but it's spotty. You know, we've made a lot of progress. During COVID, it became apparent that those of us who were in the Rural Broadband Caucus, which I helped start, we were arguing that, hey, rural America needs the same high-speed internet that is available in urban areas. People pushed back on us, but now they know we're right, because you couldn't have your kids do homework, you couldn't go to work, you couldn't have a telehealth medical appointment unless you had high-speed internet. So there's been significant funding across the country to help deploy the broadband. But it's spotty, and it's really tough on the implementation, because how you do it in, say, rural flat Kansas is a good deal different than how you might do it in the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont with all our hills. And what we're doing is we want to A, maintain funding, but B, we want to get it in law and through the Reconnect America Act, that the broadband infrastructure in rural America is what I'll call future-proofed. What it is going to be broadband that has an infrastructure so that as technology improves, rural America is not left behind with second-rate broadband. And that's the big effort we're going to make in the Rural Development Subcommittee.
How do you accomplish? Okay, please go ahead.
Well, it's using the best technology. It's fiber. You know, a lot of people have been pushing back, oftentimes from the urban folks, saying, hey, you know, we'll use towers. It'll be pretty good. It might not be what we have in the city, but it's good enough. Well, you know what? It's got to be as good as it is in the city. This is a decision that reminds me very much of when America decided in the 30s that we were going to electrify rural America. You know, there wasn't an economic case to be made, because getting electricity out to that barn at the end of the dirt road in a small town, there was no economic case for that. But there was a social and political case to integrate rural America into the new America that was now electrified. And we have to make that same commitment when it comes to broadband, because you simply can't be a member of the modern economy if you don't have access to that.
I feel like we've been talking about this issue for as long as I've been in the news and covering last mile communities. Mm-hmm. How long will it take to get every American wired in the way that you'd like to see?
I don't know how long it's going to take, but however long it takes, we got to get it done. So we've got to keep the pressure up. And especially one of the things that's terrific about this is it's bipartisan. You know, when I talk to my rural colleagues, and most of them are Republicans, you know, a lot more Republicans represent rural America than Democrats. When I talk to them about, hey, how's broadband in your community? We have a good conversation, and our interests are really aligned. And what I'm finding is that one of the side benefits of working so hard on getting broadband to our rural communities is that it's very good relationship building, in common ground seeking, in collaboration with my Republican colleagues. And we need bipartisanship in this institution and in our country. So I see working on this issue, as long as I have and as hard as I am, is a good opportunity for me to develop relationships with my Republican colleagues that hopefully will allow us to work on issues beyond broadband.
Are there other places where you're seeing agreement with your GOP colleagues? And let me just say, you had experience in both the majority and the minority in the House. How are things different on the other side?
Well, in fact, there is a lot of bipartisanship. You know, I'm sponsoring a bill with Senator Cruz and Senator Scott, two different bills, but it's about our opioid crisis. I'm working with Senator Braun of Indiana on invasive species that affects folks in Indiana and is affecting us with the emerald ash borer in our ash trees in Vermont. So there's real opportunities on specific issues. You know, a lot of the big issues we may disagree, But I'm working with Senator Marshall on broadband. He's from Kansas, and Senator Tuberville from Alabama, my ranking member on the Rural Broadband Committee. So I am finding the real opportunity for bipartisanship, and the opportunity comes when you get specific on an issue. A lot of the big, broader questions like taxing and spending will always be a big fight and a big divide. But on these concrete things that actually make a difference to folks in Vermont and Kansas and Texas, we can find common ground.
So how does it work when you're dealing with somebody like Senator Cruz, with whom you have a lot of disagreements? Do you just agree not to talk about the things you are on different sides on? And how does that actually work, senator to senator?
You know, that's how it works. You know, Senator Cruz actually called me to see if I wanted to sponsor this legislation that he'd been working on. I called Senator Murkowski to get her help on a bill I'm working on. So it's specific. I mean, all of us have a shared obligation to do everything we can to help the people that we represent. And none of us can be successful unless we get, in many cases, to 60 votes, but certainly to 50. So there's an incentive we have to try to find allies who will help us. And the way you do that is by being very specific on the issue where you're seeking that person's support. And then we can have a discussion about that and just put on hold the battle we'll have about, like with Senator Cruz, he and I basically disagree on every judicial nomination that comes before the Judiciary Committee.
You mentioned the 60-vote threshold. There was a lot of talk about getting rid of the filibuster in the last couple of election cycles. Is that any closer to reality?
It is not. I mean, I've vindicated my support for ending the filibuster because I think it's been very much abused. But I don't see that changing in this Congress.
Okay, a couple more things. You are, of course, as you mentioned, on the Judiciary Committee. There's been a lot of attention paid to the health of California Senator Dianne Feinstein, who is also on that committee. Do you have any thoughts about whether she should step down before the end of her term?
I don't. I mean, that's not for me to say. I mean, fortunately, Senator Feinstein is back. She's been in committee and voting. She was on the floor during the debt debate and voting. She's made a number of accommodations. You know, she was to be president pro tem that put her third in line for the presidency, and she relinquished that. She was to be the chair of the Judiciary Committee, but in view of her health, she relinquished that as well. But this is a decision that she's got to make. And the good news is that she's here in voting. You know, everyone knows that she's been an extraordinary public servant for decades. So this is going to be her call. But as I mentioned, good news is that she's here and she's engaged and she is voting.
And lastly, the Times just did a probing story on President Biden and the main issue that voters seem to have in polls about him running for a second term, which is his age. How do you feel about him being the Democratic standard bearer in 2024?
Well, two things. Number one, I support him. He's got a very compelling political case. His accomplishments have been really quite extraordinary with the Inflation Adjustment Act, with the infrastructure bill. All of that, by the way, was bipartisan with how he's put together an international coalition for us to help Ukraine against the aggression of Russia. So he's got a very, in my view, compelling case to run again. And I think that's why Democrats supported him. Second, he's got the age issue, and he's acknowledged that. I mean, he'll be the oldest person ever to run for president. And the burden is on him, and he's accepting that to demonstrate that he's all set to go for another term.
And you think he can do it?
I think he can, you know, and he's performing.
Vermont Senator Peter Welch is a Democrat. He's been in that office since 2023 after serving in the House starting in 2007. Senator Welch, thank you for taking all of your valuable time to speak with us and our listeners.
Well, likewise. Thank you and your listeners as well. Thank you, Ian.